You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Good morning, Brad. It's episode number 25. We've been doing this for 25 weeks. Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
I honestly didn't think we'd stick with it this long, but going strong and really still enjoying it. And it's kind of cool. So 25, but it's just me and you this week. No Jim. Jim's in San Francisco this week. Did you see his message about hitting Blue Bottle this week?
No, what's that?
It's a good coffee chain out there in San Francisco. So I had to dig up my own picture from 2015 when I hit probably the exact same location he was at, since we were both hanging out in generally the same area. Yeah, I kind of like that. I miss that when I'm not out there.
Yeah, I saw a picture he posted of some hot chocolate or something. He said it was like single source hot chocolate or something like that, single origin. I thought that was interesting.
That's San Francisco for you.
I didn't realize that was at a particular coffee franchise, though.
Yeah, San Francisco based, I think. So let's see, we have some follow-up from a couple of weeks ago I meant to bring up, and I forgot, which is kind of annoying because Jim's not here and he was the one who asked the question. So a couple of weeks back, we talked about SetApp, the alternative Mac app store, where you pay 10 bucks a month, kind of like the Netflix for Mac apps. And the question that came up was, what happens if you get dependent on an app and then the publisher decides to not include their app with SetApp anymore? Well, the answer, according to the folks at SetApp, is that you can still continue to use the app. You just won't get any updates.
That's a nice thing. At least you don't get cut off mid-app, if you will.
Yeah, especially if you grow dependent on it, you kind of need it. That would be kind of important. Let's see what else is going on. Oh, the Legion TV show. Did you get a chance to check that out, Brad?
I did. It was really awesome. I am really fully intrigued. I'm ready for episode 2, 3, 4, 5 and on.
Yeah, it seems kind of a weird character for them to have picked from the X-Men comics. As a big X-Men reader over the years, he was always sort of, I don't want to say a C-level character, but he wasn't really prominently featured. But it was kind of weird. He was kind of like the MacGuffin that could rearrange the universe and sort of shake things up. He was responsible for Apocalypse Rising in the comics when he did some time travel shenanigans. So it seemed like a weird choice for a TV show, but they're really making it work. It really feels like a sort of a David Lynch warped reality, you don't know what's going on type of thing. And I think it's going to put a lot of people off, but I really enjoyed it. It's one of those things you can't halfway watch. You really have to pay attention, kind of like Westworld or something like that. You can't be playing on your iPad when you watch it. You'll have no idea what's going on.
Right. I've noticed that too. I think I've had my phone in my hand when I first fired the show up, and some kind of flashback or some quick cut or something happened, and I kind of missed it, so I just set my phone down. I still subscribe to Comixology Unlimited, so I downloaded several Legion graphic novels that are included in the Unlimited subscription, and I've been reading those the past couple of days.
I do the Marvel Unlimited, and they have the Discover section where usually whatever is popular in the media at the time, they'll go ahead and put a focus on this character. And they've had a focus on Legion for a while, so they've had those pop up. But again, they're deviating. This is completely its own thing. They're not really following the comics closely at all. But it's still kind of an interesting thing to see what the character can do. It's kind of weird that it's set in the X-Men universe, but there are no X-Men in this universe from what I've read. It's mutants are still a new thing. And you can't even tell what year it takes place in. It looks like it's the 1960s, or it could be the 2060s. You never know.
Yeah, I noticed that too. There's some people that have on some like retro type clothes, or the mental hospital is sort of retro looking, sort of like maybe not 12 Monkeys, but more like Girl Interrupted type retro. And then there's something that somebody will have a smartphone or something, and then you think, well, maybe it's not 1960.
They're all just hipsters who really like Mad Men.
I did really like his jacket that he wears in the series that he's worn several times. It's like an orange jacket with yellow stripes on the sleeves.
Yeah, that was an unusual looking jacket. And the one thing that I'm kind of irritated about, they're not making his hair like it is in the comics. His hair perpetually will not lay down in the comics. It stands straight up.
Yeah, that was another thing while I was been reading the graphic novels. It seems like every fifth or sixth panel he references his dad, Charles Xavier. So that's sort of a takeaway from what you were saying, where they're not really following the comics on the show. Not that I would hope that he would say, well, my dad, Charles Xavier, every 3 minutes on the show.
So the show's creator, Noah Hawley, says that at some point they will address the fact of who his father is. And they said that, you know, in subsequent seasons, you may even see him pop in. But they said it probably won't be Patrick Stewart or James McAvoy because they couldn't afford them. So, and I thought, well, wait a minute, Patrick Stewart's been on American Dad for the last 12 years as a, even in voice acting, but still, and he was on Star Trek: The Next Generation for 7 years. What else has he got going on right now besides X-Men stuff?
That's right. Hadn't really even been in the last few X-Men movies. I mean, he was in Days of Future Past, but he was only in it for a few scenes. It wasn't like he was in it for the entire movie, like Logan or.
Yeah, but he's
James McAvoy.
He's about to be in Logan for the whole thing. So, you know, he's still doing it.
Yeah, true. But yeah, that's true.
That'd be a great tie-in if they had managed to work that out at the same time. But anyway, it's pretty interesting. I'm digging it.
I keep trying to catch Noah Hawley's film making in the show compared to watching the first two seasons of Fargo, trying to catch his storytelling in it, and I haven't really quite seen it yet.
I don't know that he's like a Wes Anderson or something where you see the signature style and you can tell who made it, you know, just based off what's in it. But I don't know. It's got that the lady who was in Fargo.
Yeah, Jean Smart.
Well, not just her. What do you call it? The Keller lady, the one that's playing Syd Barrett, the blonde-haired mutant.
Oh, right. I forgot that she was on there. I kept thinking, who is she? And now I remember she was the kind of promiscuous daughter.
Yep. Good stuff. Let's see what else had happened this week. I built a dedicated Waze tablet. So I even blogged about this on my site that I haven't maintained in a year. But I went ahead and got a dedicated Android tablet. And that's weird for me. That feels so wrong. But, you know, I really wanted Waze in my car. We talked
about it. It's dirty.
It is so dirty. We talked about this earlier where Waze is still not in CarPlay. It's not an Android Auto. And the more that I think about it, like, what is taking them so long to do this? The interface for that app is really touchscreen centric. And if you've used CarPlay in a vehicle, a lot of times you have to use a click wheel. So you have to modify those interfaces. And think about how many things, like if you're reporting a road closure or a cop sitting on the side of the road or whatever, there's a lot of menus to navigate, even with your hand, if you're touching the screen. So I'm guessing, you know, just purely a guess, the holdup for it to showing up on these car-based systems is just changing that UI so that it's more friendly to that interface. Just a guess. But I got antsy, and I went ahead and bought a cheap $200 NVIDIA Shield K1 tablet, which I'll link to in the show notes. And it's worked out pretty well. It's a reasonably snappy CPU. It's an 8-inch tablet. It was $200. And it just got an update to Nougat on Friday. So it's running the latest version of Android as of Friday. So that's, you know, for $200, it's not a bad. I mean, if you were going to pay for a dedicated GPS, if you're still that type of person, you would
spend probably close to $200. So,
and you can get your email on this if you really want to. Not that I do. I found a perfect tablet mount that was about $10 on Amazon that I bought. And the one thing that I didn't anticipate would be how power thirsty this thing is. So you're running something with a GPS. That was the other thing. I had to get a tablet with a built-in GPS. I couldn't just use a standard tablet. I needed something where I could, you know, have a GPS in it. So for that price point, it was pretty good. But running something with a GPS, running Wi-Fi and the screen on for
a giant screen.
Yeah, for a long time. I found an 18-watt USB car charger that supports quick charge to help keep it juiced. So the total outlay of cash was probably about $250. All told, but it's been very good. I will say that Waze kind of did me wrong last night. My wife and I went out to dinner in Alpharetta, and we were coming home, and instead of taking me back the way that I expected, it sent me way out of the way. It made me go all the way back to the interstate, come back around. It added probably about 10 minutes onto my trip, and there was no reason for it to do so as far as I could tell.
So you normally would have taken a what's called a secondary road or a blacktop road from Alpharetta back home versus getting on the interstate?
Yes, it sent me what would have been probably an 11-mile trip turned into maybe an 18-mile trip because of what it did. So that was a little...
Was it trying to get you there faster or what?
I think it knew that you could go theoretically faster on the interstate and the state highway than taking the secondary road that I would normally take. But still, I mean, there's no way that would have been faster. No way. So still not perfect, but hey, what can you do? So don't mind it too much.
So do you use the shortcut to call up your Waze lady? Like on the iPhone, you can do a 3-finger touch, or you can swipe over the camera, over the FaceTime camera, and it will trigger the Waze lady to ask you, and then you can give it a voice command like report police or something like that. Were you able to do that from your NVIDIA or what?
That's an excellent question. I, you know, honestly, when I use it, I don't even do that on the iPhone. I need to investigate the gestures and shortcuts and see if I can do that.
I do use that. just to make it that much more road friendly, because you still, if you don't know exactly where that, when you hit that little orange tab in the bottom and then you pull up that 3x3 grid of police or hazard or whatever, my brain doesn't memorize where something may be. You know, hazard and police are always the first two, but you know, that might be something to think about, just to see if you could maybe get it to either trigger through front facing camera or the three finger touch, if that's even an option on the Android version. Surely it is.
I'll have to check that out. That would be a great shortcut. Ideally, you want to see something like the audio interface in CarPlay or presumably Android Auto, where you can just issue a voice command. Like, it would be nice to be able to say, you know, hey, telephone, there's a cop over here, report that through Waze, and just have it automatically handle that for you instead of having to do anything where you're taking your hand off the wheel. So
it would be nice for it to do that, simply because even SoundHound now, you can, on this is on iOS, you can say, hey, hound, or something, and it will do sort of like, I don't know if you're familiar with SoundHound, but it's sort of like...
it's like Shazam.
Right, Shazam. I couldn't think of it. But you say, hey, hound, what song is this? And it, you know, catches it. And it would be, I don't know if that's some sort of plug-in to Siri or something where they're trying to do a voice trigger, but surely Waze could come up with that at some point, being that they're backed by the giant conglomerate that is Alphabet.
Well, you know, with SiriKit, the way things have been working, like, there have been Venmo and PayPal integrations where you can tell your telephone to send a payment to someone, and it will, if you've had that configured and you've said allow this, it'll take voice commands and do that. And the SoundHound stuff is built directly into Siri. But yeah, I would like to be able to see, you know, open up those integrations to third parties where it's, but again, being that it's a rival company to Apple, who knows when that will actually happen. Kind of annoying, though. I hope to not have to use this solution for too long, but whenever you follow Waze on Twitter and look at their stream of their replies, whenever they're asked about CarPlay and Android Auto, which seems to be most of the tweets that come Waze's way, there's no plans for that at this time. There's no plans for this at that time. They say it about both platforms, even though the Android integration was mentioned at Google I.O. last year. That, you know, that's not entirely correct, but...
Well, maybe they're just telling people that until they can figure out the cleanest and best way that they feel is clean and best for them.
Yeah, you have to think it's coming at some point, so... All right, what happened this week? So Amazon's former Fire TV director got poached by Apple. Did you see that?
No, I missed that.
A man by the name of Timothy Twerdhall, which my autocorrect tried to change to twerk every single time I typed his name. The guy spent 6 months at Netflix, 2 years at Roku, and 4 years at Amazon.
So he was like the Android type guy, or what? I mean, when I think Fire, I think Android, so...
Yes, he worked, well, for their Fire TV platform. So yes, it's based off Android, but... For the entire time, he was, he spent time at Netflix, he spent time at Roku, and 4 years at Amazon, so.
Oh, so maybe that means he's going to get pulled into the Apple TV and possibly helping with some of their TV integrations.
Right. It looks like he's going to be working more on the hardware aspects of the device. Pete Distad, who is the guy who was running that team before, was from Hulu, and apparently he's going to be focusing on content deals going forward. So I think they need both. So what do you think from the Apple TV perspective? What's missing hardware-wise that's needed?
Probably 4K gigabit Ethernet, which that really has nothing to do with the actual video, because I mean, certainly you can stream 4K over 100 megabit. But what are you trying to get me to say here?
No. I was just from your usage, what you were looking at. I think 4K would be the first thing that everybody says. But the thing that's kind of strange there, I mean, in order for that device to support 4K,
that's right.
iTunes would need to actually support 4K, which it does not currently.
I think that's right.
So that's kind of an issue. I know that the last time I looked at it, if you wanted 4K streams through Netflix, there wasn't a lot of content available, and I think you actually had to pay extra per month to get access to the 4K streams. So, I know that it's every TV seems to have it now. It's just that the content providers have been very slow to go ahead and adopt that.
I haven't bit the 4K yet. All my TVs are still 1080. I've been eyeing an LG or a Samsung curved 4K I still can't decide if I want to go with 3D. I know people have said 3D is dead or whatever, so I can't think it's really worth it, even though it would be kind of fun, but I don't really want to sit in my living room with Terminator glasses on my face. So I just really haven't made a decision about which 4K TV I really want, but it's definitely a relevant topic since everything is going 4K. I mean, even gaming workstations are being sold with 4K capable video cards, and they're, you know, you spend a few extra $100 and get a 4K gaming display.
Well, that's true. It's just the lack of content options that are, you know, I can't watch my DirecTV now streaming in 4K. I can't watch the PlayStation View service in 4K. I don't think my over-the-air Silicon Dust does 4K. I need to look into that and see if that's true or if there's an option for that. But there's just so few viewing options right now, aside from the occasional Netflix stream. Maybe some of the Amazon content is probably 4K, but I don't know. I'm sure when it comes out, it'll be great when Apple adopts it. And at some point when I get around to replacing my televisions, that's the other thing too with my TVs that are 1080p. They look great now. And even though TVs are cheap, even the ones that do 4K are cheap, just the, do I really want to replace this? And most of the time the answer is no. I'm really in no hurry to change those out.
It's kind of one of those, if it ain't broke, sort of scenarios, because how much more high resolution do your eyes need? You know, even though it'll be more lifelike and, you know, I have a 480 hertz refresh rate or something, you know, way higher than 240 hertz, there's got to be a point where your eyes aren't going to be able to even perceive it. I mean, they say that your eyes can't really perceive 720 to 1080, which I'm sure it can at certain distances or at certain screens that, you know, display it a certain way. You know, you would have to literally have two screens side by side, one running in 720 and one running in 1080 to be able to discern that.
I think for some films on Blu-ray that I've seen where you can actually see the almost the pores of the individual hairs on a person's face, that's the only time that it ever really stands out like, oh, that's really crisp. I'm not trying to poop on 4K. I think it's fine. I don't think if you have the hardware that's capable of it, but you don't have an abundance of content, it just doesn't seem like something that I'm clamoring to have until everything that I can get to stream is in 4K. Some of the stuff that you stream now still comes across as 720. There are some things that you can find that still aren't 1080. So it's,
you remember when the first progressive DVD players came out, and I'm stepping way back here, but
the ones that did upscaling,
right? Is there a 4K upscaling in some of this new 4K hardware so that it upscales your 1080 content?
I don't think so. I do notice that some of the,
does it look like crap or what?
Some of the 1080p content is in, they have the 1080p HDR, which actually looks pretty good. So the high dynamic range 1080p stuff looks really, really good. And in some cases, seeing those comparisons next to the 4K, I mean, my old eyes can't tell the difference. I actually kind of think the 1080p HDR looks, you know, good enough to me. But again, I mean, I know they make the 4K Blu-rays. I don't think I own a single one. But it's just not worth it right now at this point. I don't think people drag the Apple TV through the mud. Why, it doesn't even do 4K. It's like, what am I clamoring to watch in 4K? Where can I go to get all of this 4K content that I don't have today? And I'm talking a lot of over the air content.
Well, I think the whole reason, you know, some people like myself haven't gone 3D yet is because I was kind of waiting for maybe one 3D standard to come along, sort of like we had HD DVD and we had Blu-ray several years ago, and Blu-ray won out, and then you had the active or passive 3D technology, because I've always thought the passive ones would be good enough. I mean, that's what they use in the movie theaters. They're not handing everybody a $100 pair of 3D glasses at the movie theaters. So I guess my point is 4K going to stick around, sort of like we see 3D sort of dying off? Is 4K just a flash in the pan, sort of like 3D was or is?
I've taken the same approach to that too. I mean, a lot of the 3D stuff ends up giving me a headache depending on what I'm watching. I remember I went to see the Phantom Menace when they redid that one in 3D, not because I love the Phantom Menace, but I just wanted to see a Star Wars movie in 3D. And I think I had a headache for 2 days after that one. Now, not all of them do that to me, but after that, I just tended to avoid them. And when you see those things at home, the problem there too is that what if you have five people in your family? Are you going to get five pairs of 3D glasses? You can't passively watch it while you're doing something else without it looking weird. I mean, I'm with you on that. I kind of wanted to see, well, when this has more adoption, I'll worry about getting it. And I still kind of feel that way with 4K. Will something else supplant it before it gains mass adoption? That's the thing that I worry about.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like there's going to be, you know, 8K or 16K out before I have bought my first 4K TV. So we'll see. Or everything will be 16K OLED, you know, powered off of your kinetic energy of you wiggling your feet while you watch TV or something.
It's never a good sign when it takes a long time for something to be adopted like that. You know, even Blu-ray, as great as Blu-ray is, physical media kind of died in the middle of its adoption. So there are things that I want to get on Blu-ray that are only available on DVD, despite the fact they were just made. A lot of TV shows are like that.
Because they never got around to doing it because they feel like it's not relevant. Like they think only DVD or digital streaming is the way to go.
Pretty much. They keep their costs as low as possible and they skip the Blu-ray and just do DVD. TV is the worst about that.
DVD for the Redbox or the olds and then streaming for everybody else.
Pretty much. They've taken us folks that still will occasionally consume physical media and they don't really keep us as a viable demographic. But we'll see. I am kind of excited that they've gotten somebody from the Amazon side of things to go in there and hopefully shake up the hardware, if nothing else. At least keep it feature parity to the Roku, the latest Roku, and the latest Fire TV, if nothing else. And I hope the Hulu exec that was doing the Apple TV stuff will now, the one who's focusing on the content deals, will maybe lock in something pretty cool that will make it stand out to its competitors.
Yeah, I still think what we talked about a few weeks ago with Apple doing sort of exclusive deals and trying to do these all-inclusive deals to get you to onto some sort of Apple Music subscription platform, but for the Apple TV versus doing their own content, sort of like Netflix, to get you locked into their platform or their ecosystem. Sort of like what Amazon is doing, where they have the subscriptions baked in now to where you can get pretty much all the premium providers you would want just through your Prime TV subscription.
I do wonder if that TV app isn't going to be and end up being the same thing where, you know, right now, I don't know if you've used the TV app on the Apple TV.
A little bit.
I've been using it a little more and more. You know, I subscribe to several things through iTunes, and iTunes' interface is garbage. If you go into TV shows, then you go into purchased, and then you go into recent purchases, and then you go to this. And let's say you have something like The Big Bang Theory, where there's 10 seasons. It'll start you at season one, episode one. So you have to pick the right season and scroll all the way to the end. And it's not good. Now, you can use Siri and say, play the latest episode, which I will often do. But if you also pop into the TV app, you'll see these are the things that you've bought recently. These are the things that have new episodes. Based on what you've watched in other apps, it'll also tell you. So it knew that I watched It's Always Sunny in the FX app. So that was one of the things that was available to me in the, hey, these have recent episodes that have come out. Do you want to watch them? So I'm guessing this is where they're probably moving with that. And I certainly hope so. It'd be a lot better than what we have now. Let's see, another rumor that came out this week was that there are some analysts that are saying that the new iPhones are going to feature wireless charging this year. And I'm going to go on record, I may be wrong, but I'm going to say that's not going to happen this year. And the reason I say that, there was a demo that came out from a company about a week and a half ago, where they demoed wireless charging, and they had a box the size of like a 1980s era microwave that was sitting on a table, and they were shooting power across the room, and they were able to charge an iPhone and an Android phone from a few feet away. But if this is the cutting edge right now in February of 2017, you have this box that looks like a microwave that's doing this. There's no way that Apple's going to have that in the fall, you know, for the consumer market where you're doing charging over the air. It's just not going to happen. Did you see that demo that I linked to in the show notes?
That's crazy. It's like you walk into somebody's house and you say, oh, did you get a new mini fridge or is that some new subwoofer you got there? No, that's my wireless charger. I mean, come on. That's really ridiculous.
No, let me shoot my death ray into your phone. Let me do something with this microwave from the 80s that you could do with a power cord in about 10 minutes. It's great.
Let's all cook our insides while we watch television, guys.
I know that there's that Douglas Adams quote that anything that happens before you're 20, you take for granted. Anything between the time you're 20 and 35 is magic, and then anything over 35 that's new, you don't trust it. But I'm trying not to be that way, but my goodness, the whole wireless charging. When you see that demo, that video, which I'll put a link in the show notes, it's like, wow, what is it? How is it doing this? How are you shooting energy through the air and catching it in a phone? How is this working?
Well, I mean, it's just like any other radio. I mean, they're shooting energy through the air with a radio or with Wi-Fi. But at the same time, why would you need a device that big? I mean, that's part of why, I mean, sort of, this is part of why we don't have teleporting yet, just because the device would be giant just to move, you know, a thing the size of an apple, or it would require so much energy, like you wouldn't be able to afford to use it. And I guess also we really haven't discovered how to actually quantum leap, but at the same time, it's that same kind of thing. Is it practical enough? You know, do you want to have to build a house next to your house to be able to accomplish the thing?
Yeah, it's true. Let's see what else happened. Google is taking on the Apple Watch, Android Wear 2.0. So we talked about this last week about the Apple Watch being a secret success that people don't really talk about, and how Android Wear 2.0 was delayed. And no sooner than I say that, a week later, the Android Wear 2.0 watches from LG were announced. Did you take a look at these? What did you think?
I think they're pretty cool watches, actually. Number one, they're really stylish looking. They look like a handful of them, like the LGs, look like my Swiss Army watch I just got last year. They're large, probably 6 millimeters deep, at least 40 millimeters across, and they're very metallic and very bulky, very man looking, as far as if a man my age wants to wear a manly watch and not something that looks more like a Fitbit or something sort of minuscule and plasticky. The interfaces on it are pretty nice. They're sort of minimalist in that they're not trying to squeeze 20 things onto the screen. Although I know you can do that with the Apple Watch, you really don't need more than about 4 complications before things start to get too crowded on the face. I am excited about the LTE support, or you could actually have a standalone smartwatch.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. It does do a scrolling-friendly UI, so you can have a rotating bezel. That's sort of strange. Of course, there's support for Android Pay. As we mentioned, there's LTE support. But one of the things that caught my attention from the article in The Verge was that the band contains the antenna. So you can't really replace the watch band, which that blew my mind, especially after a year and a half, nearly 2 years now, of replacing Apple Watch bands. The one you buy is the one you get seems really, really limiting to me. But again, you're working with a form factor that is so small that you have to have some sort of compromises. So it's hard to blame them for that. And that may be a reason why we haven't seen LTE in the Apple Watch yet.
Very possible.
But wow, having the band into the watch, the antenna in the band so that you can't change it it blows my mind.
Well, maybe they'll come up with something down the road where you can buy an official LG band or an official Android 2.0 Wear band that has an LTE antenna in it, so that you could replace the rubbery band with a metallic band, or my favorite, the woven nylon band.
If you have the lugs, that would be something that's possible. I would have to do a little more digging, but I don't think that they even have it so that the bands are swappable, but I'll take a look. So there's two models. There's the sport model, which is a little bit larger. Then you have what's known as the style model. So that one doesn't do fitness tracking, no barometer, no standalone GPS, and no NFC. And I read that and I'm thinking, well, it pretty much just tells time. I guess that seems like a weird compromise.
I guess what they're going for, obviously, with the name, is they're going for somebody who wants a little whiz bang on their nice looking watch, whereas the folks with the sporty one are getting the more electronic or mobile features across the board, which I don't know if that has to do with maybe trying to make the watch weightier, so they put less tech in it so that it's got more steel or aluminum in it versus tech. Who knows?
Well, I think about the differences between the 42 and the 38 millimeter Apple watches, and they still all contain the same technology, whether or not you're 38 or 42. It seems very strange to me that you would have to make a choice, like, do I want this larger watch or do I want this smaller one? But the smaller doesn't do what we've seen most of the things that people want a watch to do. The fitness tracking blows my mind. Like, if you had no barometer, no standalone GPS, and no NFC, I still find that kind of weird, but I'd be like, okay, I kind of get it. But the fitness tracking, who buys a watch and would wear it with no fitness tracking? That just, if you have a smartwatch, why would you not do that? Why would you not want that? It seems like a compromise that I wouldn't expect people to want to make in a smaller model, since that has proven to be the most valuable feature by far to most customers.
It's definitely a weird trade-off. I was kind of excited about the nerdy aspect of the barometer, because it would be, number one, a sporty watch. You want it to be a little tougher. So if you're one of those folks that rock climbs or, is a very outdoorsy person, you're camping at, say, 3,000 feet, or I don't know who camps at 3,000 feet, but my Suunto had a barometer on it. They didn't call it a smartwatch. It was called a wrist top computer, but it had an altimeter and a barometer and several other things. It was more whiz bang than anything. I mean, I wasn't the type of person that was using it for what it was really purposed for. I think maybe they're trying to pull in that market too, sort of not just the fitness folks, but the outdoorsy folks.
That is a good point, and a barometer is still something that the Apple Watch doesn't have in either model. So that is a nice thing. One of the weirdest things that I thought about this is that Google is really making a reach out to people that own iPhones as well. So if you have one of these Android Wear 2.0 watches, you get access to the Play Store, the Google Play Store, in addition to still having your access to your iPhone apps on your iPhone. So that seemed kind of weird to me for just a moment of like, wow, that's sort of a nice inroad of trying to grab people away from the Apple ecosystem by giving them access to that store. Whereas on the iOS side of things, if you have an Apple Watch, you're tethered to that phone. So you're, you know, there's really no escaping that ecosystem.
So would you use the terminology like they do side loading sort of thing where it's maybe running in a isolated environment, or are they somehow going to get hardware access to the iPhone to be able to pull this off?
I don't think they're going to have hardware access. I think they're going to be like the Fitbits and the other stuff. And you can do this with the Android Wear watches now in the 1.0 revision. You can send it notifications. Think about things like we've used in the past, like Boxcar and other similar apps where it's just like a notification clearinghouse. And
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Boxcar.
Thanks. Used to use that all the time back in the day in the more primitive iOS days. So I see it still being something like that, where it's passing you notifications and it's using everything through documented APIs. But also it's saying, hey, come play in this world if you want this app. But one of the things that I would see as a negative, let's say I'm a big fan of the podcast app Pocket Casts. If I already have that on iOS, I can't, of course, just load it onto my watch and use my watch for it, I would actually have to pay the $4 again through the Play Store, which incidentally I did for my Shield K1 tablet. Yeah, that's sort of strange that you have access to these two app stores. And unless you're savvy, that might be kind of confusing, though I can't imagine a lot of people using an Android Wear 2.0 watch while also owning an iPhone.
Well, there was an app I downloaded on my Kindle Fire. I've got a Fire 8 HD. When I first got it, this is probably a year ago, maybe, or 6 months ago. You know, you can't run every Android app on the Fire. It's just not natively anyway. You can't just go to the Amazon App Store and download whatever app that you may have seen in Google Play. Well, there was some third party like gaming app, and it's not necessarily a jailbreak because I didn't have to root the device or anything, but I downloaded this app and they sort of market games in it, and it's very ad heavy in the actual app. But you could sort of sideload Android apps through it using it as an app store instead of the Kindle app store. And this is before like Reddit was native to the Fire OS or maybe even a few other ones like maybe Marvel Unlimited. And so I was just sideloading them. That's sort of the verbiage I've seen on Android forums. And then I started to feel weird about it, like something doesn't seem right about this. Like I'm not that I'm doing something illegal, but you know, am I infecting my tablet somehow is there malware or spyware running in this thing?
Is there a reason you can't do it natively? That's sort of the way I feel. Of course, with Amazon having a fork of Android, it's really more or less they're sort of giving the middle finger to Google on that one, I tend to think. Funny you should mention the whole sideloading thing. So when I was playing with the Shield K1, I noticed sort of a thing that you don't really see in the iOS world, which is there are apps that are meant for the phone that you can't load on a tablet. And that blew my mind, right? So if you think about it from the iOS world, if you can run it on a phone, you can run it on a tablet. I've never seen something where it would refuse to. Now, it may not be optimized. The resolution may be all blown up and it may look like garbage, but you can still load it. Nothing ever stops you. So when I got this little 8-inch tablet, I thought, okay, I'm gonna put Waze, Google Maps, and I'm gonna have Spotify, Pocket Casts, and Apple Music. Everything went on. The one app that wouldn't go on, Apple Music. It said this is not supported on your device. And a little
interesting.
It was weird. And what was strange, you know, a friend loaned me an Android phone, so I had put Apple Music on that. And that worked just fine. You know, I got a request for a two-factor auth on my computer saying, hey, somebody's trying to authenticate on this other device. And I said, yeah, it's okay. And it wouldn't load on the tablet. And I did some Googling, and apparently Apple only wants it on phones. So that there's a restriction that is honored. The other thing is I was gonna load Android Auto onto the tablet. I mean, hey, I'm using it in a car. At some point, if it gets supported, Waze gets supported in Android Auto, why wouldn't I just put that on the tablet? Since it's running Nougat, it's fast, it's good, why not? Well, apparently they've blocked that as well. It says this is not supported for your device. It only wants it to run on phones, which again, very, 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 very annoying. And I thought, you know, does CarPlay have that restriction? Turns out CarPlay does have that restriction. You can't buy an iPad mini, for example, and attach it to a CarPlay system, which I didn't know that either. However, that's built into the OS and iOS, whereas this is a separate third-party app. So I did find some services that will allow you to sideload apps, as you say. So I may end up putting both Apple Music and the Android Auto on the tablet if I feel that way. So far, I haven't had a need to do either one, but I just don't like being told no.
They make a cellular-capable iPad mini, right?
They do. And what kept me from going down that route was that it was I wanted to keep my costs as low as possible for this, right? I didn't want to spend a lot of money on something. And getting the Wi-Fi plus cellular iPad mini was going to be more expensive than just buying a $199 tablet.
Well, it's probably pushing $700 or something. And I guess what I was getting at was, I can see where they would want to create a divide of only putting cellular-capable devices in your car to support CarPlay, but if you make a cellular-capable tablet, why not? Unless they're worried you're going to be really engaged by that, you know, larger screen that you're going to have to either pull off the road to use it, just not use, you know, you shouldn't be using it versus using your tiny phone screen. I'm trying to figure out the thinking behind that.
So if that were the case, though, you think they would also restrict Waze and any other sort of navigation app in there, right? I mean, doesn't that make sense?
True, because I remember at some point whenever the cellular capable iPad came out, what was that, the iPad 2 or even the... No, wait, they had the cellular in the first version because I remember my wife bought the first one and she had one in hers. So something that Jim and I joked about was supplanting the GPS in the car with the iPad, and we were just basically Velcro on the dash and Velcro on the back of the iPad, use the cellular capable, and you'd have Apple Maps, and you'd always have up or Google Maps, but you'd have up-to-date apps versus what came baked into the GPS that was sold with the manufacturer, with the car manufacturer.
And that is true. That's they've always had the GPS and the cellular since the very first one. I just checked, and to get a 32 gig iPad mini 4 with cellular new would be $530 versus the $199 that I paid for a Wi-Fi only with GPS NVIDIA Shield K1. So even as a diehard Apple guy, I can't swallow a $330 difference for nothing.
Getting tack on, like, you're not using any sort of LTE service on your NVIDIA, are you? It's just GPS.
I tether the NVIDIA to my cell phone. So I'll put my iPhone in personal hotspot mode, tether to that.
Okay.
So I still get, you know, I'm still using the data that I already pay for, but I'm not having to pay an additional fee, because then you have the Verizon monthly fee on top of that of a per device charge that I would have to pay if I did that. So again, it was all about just sort of keeping the cost low, but still acceptable.
Exactly.
But you would think, you know, if you can run a navigation app on there, what does it matter what the device is? So I think I could actually force Android Auto onto this thing if I really want to do it, but I probably won't bother. It just depends, right? I still do have a phone that I can actually use. And it is kind of annoying to make the tablet get off of my home Wi-Fi and merge with my or bond to my personal hotspot, which again with iOS, you can leave the hotspot turned on all the time. But if you're not, if you don't use it for like 5 minutes, it stops broadcasting the SSID. So I have to toggle it off, toggle it back on.
Right.
It's not like if you had two iCloud devices, you would just touch your Wi-Fi and you could say, oh, I see it, right? It knows that something is out there and will activate it on demand. Of course, if you're trying to mix Android and iOS, that's not going to work. So mildly annoying, but you know, it's something I can live with. But I don't see myself jumping over to this ecosystem. I found Android to be, in a world where iOS never existed, I would probably use it just fine. But there's too many things where I'm comparing stuff to it, and it's like, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like this, I don't like that. And I guess that's not unusual.
Well, you've essentially got two vertical markets, even though they're both technology, they both make phones and tablets, whatever. You've basically got two, you know, you've got Windows and you've got Unix. You've got Mac and you've got PC. You've sort of got a divide down the middle. You've got VI and you've got Emacs. I mean, you've got sort of two camps for everything. I guess you'd call it partisan.
Yes, you would.
But you've just sort of, you're sort of married to the iOS party, and as are a lot of us, and you try to wedge in something that you do into another thing. It's like being, and I'm really not going political, but it's like you're a Republican and you think, well, that Democratic view is pretty cool, or vice versa, but it doesn't necessarily fit, or something doesn't quite mesh.
I do have a diehard Android friend who's given me grief probably for the last close to a decade, where, just try it, man. Just try it. You'll like it. Just try it. I guarantee you'll like it. So I need to talk to him since I've done this. I teased him with it, but
he's not going to appreciate your voice that you're making fun of me with.
Oh, it's exactly the way he sounds. That's the way he sounds constantly in all things, in all situations.
And he's going to hear this and say, I do sound like that.
But he's been bugging me to do it for a long time. He's forced to carry an iPhone for work for our old employer. You know, I get constant, this is garbage, this is terrible. So it's nice to be able to, I sent him a picture through Skype the other day. It's like, look at this. And it was the NVIDIA updating, and it said, Android is updating. I'm like, what do you think? I have Nougat before you do. And I don't even like Android. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, it's not bad. It's just... I don't know, the different paradigm. It's similar. You know, I use Android and Windows. I mean, I'm sorry, I use Mac OS and I use Windows. And that doesn't feel as alien to me sometimes as switching between, you know, iOS and Android for some reason.
I've had people hand me their Android phone because they can't figure out something on it. And they're not some gadget person like we are, or some techie person like we are. They just happen to use an Android, and they'll hand it to me and say, well, I want my phone to do this, and somebody said it could, and I look at the screen and I think, well, what am I supposed to touch first?
You know, I went through a lot of that too, of like, why is this paradigm so... It's kind of like if you speak a Latin-based language, right? Let's say you learn Italian and you want to go and learn Spanish. It's close enough that you could kind of, you know, essentially, so it's...
You can cross over pretty easily, but then you try to go speak Russian. If you only know Latin, you're going to be spending some time with Rosetta Stone for a little while.
Right. Or German or something else that sounds like Klingon. Yes. So similar sort of paradigm where it's, but I, you know, I got to say, if you needed a device, if you wanted to play around with a device and sort of dip your toe in that world and you're an iOS person, I would say that the NVIDIA Shield K1 is probably a good starter device just to play with. It's cheap. It's $200. It runs the latest version and it's as close to stock as you can get. I mean, there are some NVIDIA things that are on there. It's marketed as a gaming tablet. Whatever, but it has pretty much a very close to stock Android experience on there.
So is there a Steam client for it, or what makes it a gaming tablet? Just a 3D processor that's in it?
They have some NVIDIA specific apps that are supposed to work with it. I think I bought one of those. Sorry. If you have the Shield TV hardware too, I guess the controller from that is supposed to work with the tablet pretty well. Honestly, I haven't played with the gaming aspect of it at all. I mean, I look at my iPad Pro and I have tons of games on it. So it's like, I have zero motivation to do this. Plus,
well, you really bought it for one purpose, and you're getting there slowly, but you're getting there as far as your hopeful short transition over to Waze and CarPlay.
Yeah, it's really a single purpose device. I have no complaints in that regard. I just like the fact that it does that one thing well. I will say, in my wife's vehicle, it's not designed for tablets. We have an Equinox that she drives, and my goodness, I was reading, there's a site online called the mountguys.com where they talk about, you know, the different devices you should use in each vehicle. And I pulled up their site on the Equinox, and it's like, there is no good place to put anything in this vehicle. And I was looking at that, and sure enough, when I got in my wife's vehicle and I'm looking around, it's like the vents are vertical, for example. So if you're using a vent mount, you have to find one that supports vertical mounts. And there's only one or two that I can find that do it. And the tablet exceeds the weight requirement for both of those by almost double in some cases, because it wants you to just do a phone. So I'm having to look at right now if I want to use this, because a lot of times we go visit family, we don't take my nice vehicle, we take her vehicle for those long distance drives. And I'm looking at something, one of those beanbag things you sit on the dash.
My dad has one of those. He uses for his Garmin. My dad still uses a Garmin GPS. He's a diehard motorcycle guy, so he has sort of this dedicated GPS that he moves back and forth between his car or his truck and his motorcycles. He has a GPS mount on every one of his motorcycles. And it's one of these nicer Garmins. I mean, it's not one of these $200 guys. I mean, it's very motorcycle specific. It connects to his headset that goes to his helmet so he can talk to his buddies over the CB. It's very, you know, motorcycle-y. It was like a $900 GPS. It was crazy. And it's a giant screen, too.
Yeah, I've seen other people with those beanbag holders. This one actually is a beanbag one that's modified to hold a tablet. So again, that takes up so much real estate on the dash, though. That's the only thing that I don't like about it. And plus, that screen is an 8-inch screen. So I'm, you know, we're riding in it yesterday, and I'm looking around like, where am I going to put this thing if I get it? And still have access to power so that I can charge the thing, because again,
well, not only that, you have to be able to see the road too, and you've got a big pock in the middle of the screen. I mean, the middle of the windshield that you can't see.
Yes.
Possibly, you know, one lane of the road.
Yeah, it's massively annoying. I'm thinking of I have a friend with a 3D printer, and I could design something that would work just fine where it.
Oh, that's cool.
Where I could clip it to the there's a little overhang where everybody has the in-dash navigation type things, and there's this little overhang that sticks over. If I could just clip the thing to that, because it's like a ledge, if I could clip to that, it would be perfect, and I'd be completely set. It would be fantastic.
Clothespins, Brian. Clothespins.
I'm gonna have this thing looking awful. Yeah, this is my. I've got duct tape and I've got coat hangers, and it's gonna be wonderful. This is my.
It's all you know, L cars and Star Trek in your car, and then you get over to your wife's car, and it's, you know, duct taped and Velcroed and sort of wedged in there.
That seems about right. That seems about right.
German technology, and you have American technology.
They don't make them like they used to. Well, I think that's all I have to talk about this week. You got anything else you want to bring up?
No, pretty good.
Good deal. Well, episode 25 is in the can. Jim will be back with us next week, and this has been pretty good. So I'll talk to you next time, Brad. Have a good one.
You too, sir. Thanks.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @InfinLoopBack. That's @INFINLoopBack. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdol. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.